This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning and welcome to Medicine on Call. This morning I have one of my favorite guests on, Dr. Jane Orient, who is doing yeoman's work and one of the people who, doctors who is advocating for every doctor in this country because we are absolutely under attack. I had to have her on the show when I read her article about the congressional bill that's been passed by the House, which claims that it's fixed the doctor fix with the sustained growth rate, and it's all window dressing. I mean, you would think that the Republicans are on a doctor's side, and if you read this bill, it's a call to action for everybody in this country, doctor and patient, to stand up and work actively to defeat this. Dr. Orient, when you wrote this article, you opened my eyes to something called maintenance of certification, which we've talked about on the show before, but it was kind of a one-off. I mean, it was the boards who were, you know, trying to hype this, and we all know that this is a cartel at this point where they're making money off of doctors. But you, in your article, you tied these two things together, and I think my listeners really need to understand this because this is the end game, it seems to me.
The boards have been working with the Congress, and by the way, the Senate passed that bill yesterday.
Wow.
As well, I think they had 8 people voting against it only.
Oh, wow.
It's 92-8, something like that. And the bill is supposed to pay doctors for quality or value instead of for work. Well, it is the federal government that's going to define value, and they'll be defining the value of your physician partly based on whether or not he has met the qualifications for maintenance of certification. These are little hoops that the board set up so that once you pass your board exam, you're not certified for life like you used to be, or like you would be if you were a lawyer, for example, mm-hmm. and passed the bar exam. They will make up exams that you have to take every 10 years, and in some cases much more often than that. And these are designed so that you can't pass them without spending thousands of dollars on review courses where you memorize the answers that they want to obscure questions that will probably never come up in your practice. And they may not even be correct. You can't even find out what you got wrong or what the answers are supposed to be or have anybody else evaluate as to whether the board is even looking at the right answers.
That's crazy. I mean, it's like a big black box. And I read up on this a bit yesterday. I'm fortunate and blessed that I passed my boards the first time. And I was in that class that you don't have to recertify, so I'm technically board certified for life as well. But I read things about the pass rate has continued to go down, and there was a question: are doctors getting dumber, or is this thing really just designed to make people fail so they have to re-up and take the test and pay more money to take these review courses, and it's just a money-making scheme for these boards?
That's certainly what it looks like. The executives for the board are paid outrageous salaries, mm-hmm. probably 10 or 11 times as much as a physician who is actually seeing patients.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks as though the exams are designed to fail people. They're not asking questions that every doctor who's practicing needs to know and that does know. And it's just something. If you were board certified in 1 year, you're fine. If you were certified in the next year, then you're not fine. You have to take this exam all the time. And so one day before the exam results are announced, you could be practicing mm-hmm. and doing a great job. And the next day, you can't make a living because it announced that you failed the exam.
And it's arbitrary. I mean, this is a marketing. They haven't rolled it out yet, but do you foresee a marketing campaign where hospitals, where the government, where they will actively try to demonize any doctor who decides either not to take this test, not to, if they were certified, board certified, but they decide not to take it because they can't afford it, they don't want to do it, or they just don't want to be part of the Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare train wreck, and they're going to try to demonize docs and put them out of business. Do you foresee an ad campaign coming down the pipe now that this bill has passed?
And that's very possible. I mean, it's worse than demonizing the doctors. They may just bar them from being on the hospital staff, mm-hmm. which means that their patient can't have that doctor take care of them if they go to the hospital. Or they may bar the doctor from serving on these insurance panels. The doctor can't be in the network. So that means that if your insurance doesn't cover you if you go to see that doctor. And very likely, what you pay the doctor may not even help meet your deductible. Mm. Or they may have a separate additional deductible for out-of-network doctors. So they're going to try to convince people that doctors who don't comply with all their little requirements are not good doctors.
And it has nothing to do with the practice of medicine clinically.
Well, actually, it does. It means that you are having to memorize the answers to the way they think medicine should be practiced. And a lot of these guidelines, so to speak, are set up by people who are in the pay of drug companies.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, the prescribed treatment may be to use their drug instead of maybe not using the drug or using some other method.
You know, there's an interesting segue to that. There was an article that came out a couple of days ago about how the cost of pharmaceutical, the cost of drugs that people are buying has gone up about fourfold over the last 6 or 7 years, and really big time since Obamacare rolled out. So there's no money being saved, but as I predicted, the pharmaceutical industry got a major boon from all of this. You have to buy prescription drugs as part of your HRA or, you know, health savings account. You don't get to buy anything over the counter. That in some instances has to be brand prescription drugs. So they've just now tightened the noose, basically, on doctors having the free rein to treat their patients as individuals. So we're talking, I read something about the independent advisory board for, you know, what's covered and how much gets paid. That's, it said it was dead, but is that true now under this value service, this pay for value, is that going to be resurrected?
Oh, that's the Independent Payment Advisory Board. I think that's still there, but they're going to have the majority of physicians' pay is supposed to go through these other organizations, alternative payment methods, or
mm-hmm.
something.
Accountable
where
care.
The entity that's the APM, as they call it, will get the money. The doctor won't even get the money directly, and they will be calculating based on whatever they want, how much a doctor's supposed to be paid. You can't make any more money by working harder.
Mm-hmm.
You might be able to make more money by screening patients so that you don't have any sick people,
mm-hmm.
because sick people who require more services will count against you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a way to discriminate against people, and it really is about saving money for Medicare. And Medicare can only save money by not paying for services, which means they won't be available, which means the patients will likely die sooner, and that means that will save money for Social Security, too.
Oh, yeah. It's a giant octopus. It's like it's a pay-to-play system, but it's based on rationing, and it's going to be the doctors doing the rationing based on these accountable care organizations. So the power
well,
of the...
if they don't, they're going to be out of business.
Exactly. So the power of the purse now is centralized, for lack of a better way to put it. You've got this pocketbook from the government that everybody gets the access, but the only access that you have is if you don't do the service. And that's really what's going to be considered value-based according to the system. Is that a fair assessment?
No, or you will have, your all records will have to be in an interoperable electronic database.
Mm-hmm.
So that means the government gets all this information about you. And it can use this information to determine whether your doctor is doing what the government thinks it should do. You know, prescribing the drug that they favor, or not prescribing drugs in certain circumstances,
mm-hmm.
not offering surgery to people over the age of 75, for example.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
It's going to be the government having control over your life or death.
Who came up with this HR2? Do you know? This is the bill that just got passed by the Senate as well that we're just talking about. This sounds like it's some sort of, you know, scam from the lobbyists, the various lobbyists. But who came? Was there actually a doctor who helped craft this thing? Some sort of some Congress-based doctor?
Well, Michael Burgess has his name on there as the chief sponsor, and he is a physician, and we were really, really surprised. It's, and of course, the AMA was pushing for this.
Oh, wow.
I have to wonder why, except that it's going to have all kinds of metrics, value metrics, quality metrics, all kinds of methods for, like, risk adjustment to sort of compensate for having sicker patients or pretending to compensate for it. And I think that organized medicine is looking to be in charge of developing all of these metrics and selling them to doctors to help them, quote unquote, comply with the government requirements.
So you're basically saying this is an adjunct to the coding system then. They're going to now sell us a book of algorithms, basically, of how we should treat various diseases that are approved and value-based so you can get reimbursed. Is that what they're planning?
Oh, yeah. Well, there are guidelines. There are hundreds of guidelines already set up, and mm-hmm. that sounds deceptive because then it's supposed to be voluntary on the part of the doctor. Yeah, voluntary. If you want to get paid, you will do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want to get sued, you'll do it this way, because maybe we'll have protections against suing you if you follow our advice, no matter how the patient does.
What happened to, you know, restriction of trade? All of these things that happened, you know, that muzzle doctors, that put us in a position where if we want to stay active, if we want to practice medicine, we have to do these things. I mean, maintenance certification is supposedly voluntary. After this,
I will say it over and over again that it's voluntary. Yeah, if you want to be on the hospital staff, or if you want to be named on this patient's insurance plan, you will be engaged in maintenance certification, which, by the way, is more than just taking an exam. It's about constantly doing things in your practice to collect data and to pretend that you're improving something. And it means that the specialty boards, which are in cahoots with the government, mm-hmm. are going to be watching your patients as well as the doctor.
Break that down for 1 second. I know we're going to take a break in a minute. But when you say that, I want patients to understand data mining of information. It sounds very innocuous. You know, you do your history and physical, you take your family history or social history, no big deal. But when you're talking about getting meaningful use data, how deep does that really go? It's more than just, you know, your blood pressure and your weight, isn't it?
Well, it has to do with whether you're complying with the drugs that you're supposed to be taking.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, there are all kinds of information about your family history or about so-called social history. And many doctors are now asking questions that doctors certainly weren't taught about in medical school, like, do you own a gun? If you own a gun, how do you store your gun? And this just gives the government all kinds of information. If they do decide that something your patient is doing is criminal, for mm-hmm. example, that they didn't know about, well, here it is right there in the medical record.
Exactly. And on that note, let's take a small break and come back. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. George from Peachtree ENT Center. Understanding health insurance is becoming more challenging. If you currently have insurance, you probably know
drafted a lot of the things in this supposed SGR fix, they are the ones who are making money from the electronic health records, from setting the standards, and, you know, from skimming off probably 40% of the healthcare dollar before it ever gets to anything you'd recognize as related to helping patients get well. And, you know, if you look at who was on the Clinton Healthcare Task Force, or you look at who is getting these government contracts, it's all the big five insurance companies, especially United Healthcare, and all of their subsidiaries that are into this data management and data mining. They're the ones who are in charge. It's a public-private partnership, and the commercial insurers are really they're the ones who are making the rules and enforcing them and collecting tons of money.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. And what you said was absolutely on point. There's something called Optum, which is one of United Healthcare subsidiaries, and it is they've got it coming and going. So, I mean, between the ICD-9 and coding to, you know, when Medicare and commercial insurance folks get admitted, they have to go through a process to make sure you're admitting them with the right designation, inpatient, outpatient, or observation. And Optum owns a company that you go through, that the hospitals go as a middleman through, to make sure that the doctors put the right admission, designation on the admission. So now you have a third party just to admit your patient that's going to take money, you know, that you have to pay into, and they get to take it all under the umbrella of United Healthcare. That's
well,
be the
people
most
seem to want universal coverage, that being uninsured is a bad problem. In fact, I think patients need to wake up to the fact that so-called insurance coverage is part of the problem.
Oh, absolutely.
That you are pouring you're throwing money out the window every month when you're paying your insurance premiums. You may not get any care at all when you really need it. And if you weren't paying for the insurance company, and you were paying the doctor or the laboratory directly, I mean, the amount would be far less than what you're just throwing out the window. We should price medical services in terms of monthly premiums. And you would probably figure out that in most cases, you would be far better off to pay for it yourself and not give these guys their cut off the top.
That's what we need to do, is spend our time now educating patients about that fact. It's cheaper not to use your insurance than it is to access it. You know, catastrophic is one thing, and if you really need catastrophic care, that's what it really should be used for. Not
yeah,
every
but you can't
day.
Really buy a good catastrophic-only policy, and Obamacare has made these even less available than they were before.
Oh, I agree.
You can't get insurance that qualifies for the mandate unless it covers all kinds of things that you're never going to need or want. And that is has all of these administrative costs built into it.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, we're recommending that the best, safest way, the most economical way, is to be uninsured.
What about the medical cost sharing strategy?
Yes, and medical cost sharing is a wonderful idea, and it exempts you from the individual mandate. Samaritan Ministries, there's Christian Care MediShare, there's another one, the name escapes me.
Liberty Health.
But I love being a member of Samaritan. Every month I send a check, which is much smaller than I'd send to an insurance company, to a family that is paying a medical bill. And all these insurance parasites are not getting a cut of it.
And you know, what people don't understand is, you know, companies like Samaritan, like MediShare, like Liberty HealthShare negotiate a discounted rate with these hospitals. If their cost structure was so rigid and it really costs this much to run their system, you wouldn't be able to get 70-80% off the bill by just saying, look, let's just make a deal. I'm going to pay you cash and you cut me a break. And they're happy to do it. This is it's a house of cards. They don't even put their charges up on any database that you can actually shop around and make an informed consumer choice. They don't want that. They want this to be too scary, too big. Why bother? This is bigger than you. Just do it. You know, as long as we do that, and I don't care what it is, voting for these people in Congress, not taking responsibility for what we put in our stomachs. It's on us. If they don't have, nobody has our best interest at heart at this point. I don't see anybody working for me as a doctor, as an American citizen, as a human being at this point. So we have to take our power back. What you just described is a way to do that. Not carrying health care coverage sounds, my God, it's really crazy, but it's not. And if you did something like a supplemental insurance like Aflac or Mutual of Omaha, where you actually got coverage for being in an ICU, for having a catastrophic illness like cancer or heart disease, you actually would come out ahead, would you not?
Absolutely you would. And if you, there are some things like critical illness coverage, mm-hmm. they just pay you a certain amount of money if you get a certain diagnosis. And you can spend the money the way you want. You don't have to go by the guidelines.
Exactly.
But patients do not understand the importance of having an independent physician. I don't care how many wall hangings a physician have. I care about who's paying him. Because it is becoming increasingly important to have a doctor who really cares about you, who is only being paid by you, whose paycheck is not at risk if he deviates from the guidelines.
Exactly. And you know, the quality of care, not only do you get a much higher quality of care, but now you're in a position where you can think outside the box. You can do naturopathic things, holistic things. You can fix the problem and not just put a Band-Aid on it with a medication. I take real offense at this point to doctors who don't think, who just throw another medicine on the pile to take care of a complication or, you know, a side effect of another medication. You shouldn't even call yourself an MD. You're just a drug pusher. And any patient who comes out sicker than when they came into your office because of what you did, I just don't believe you should be practicing medicine. This is now a two-tier system, ultimately. You know, what we're just talking about for the last 45 minutes is reality as it stands now. But it is a two-tier system. What we're just discussing now briefly is how to opt out of it. And it's better, it's cheaper, with more choice. How do we get that message out to folks? Because if they knew this, every time I talk about medical cost sharing, people are like, oh my God, I didn't know it existed. Why didn't I know? And as soon as they know they have a choice, their whole mentality changes. They understand that they can take responsibility and win. How do we get that message out there?
Well, I think radio shows like yours, it helps to inform people about that. I think that they are really beginning to get angry that when they go to the doctor's office, the doctor's punching numbers into a computer. Mm-hmm. One complaint per customer, please. I think a lot of them don't realize that the medicines that they're getting a lot of times is what's making them sick. But I've had the experience of talking to doctors saying about, you know, side effects of a medication may be much worse than we thought. And they say, well, we don't really want to know about this because we have to follow the standard guidelines or we'll be in trouble.
Oh, gosh. Then why are you a doctor? That was might be my next question. I can't respect that.
Some of the most prominent physicians in the community, and I just can't believe what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Well, we have to follow the guidelines.
Wow. Well, you know, maybe we should take more of a commando approach, because I believe that doctors who say that should not be practicing, because they're not physicians. They are just agents of the government.
They may be the only kind who are going to be left if the government succeeds in driving independent doctors out of business, which they will unless the patients understand the importance of having their own doctor and who are going to give their business to the doctors who are caring for them rather than sucking it into the Optum, United Health, mm-hmm. Blue Cross, all the other people who are working in collusion with the government.
You're absolutely right. It's about patient-driven healthcare, but the patients have to drive it. I mean, I think I'm in a position, I'm not sure where you stand now, but politically, AAPS has been on the forefront of fighting everything tooth and nail. You guys must have been up on Capitol Hill more than any other physician in this country. And is that worth it to you? Do you think that you've are making a difference? I mean,
no, I think that the Congress is totally owned by special interest groups, and that both parties are the same, as we just learned with the passage of the so-called SGR fix,
mm-hmm.
which is, I would call it, sustained global rationing. And it's doctors are going to be paid less than they were, than if just the sustained growth rate had gone through. And the only answer is for physicians to stop taking their money, go back to working for the patients. You may bring in less revenue, but you'll need less to pay your bills if you don't have all of this administrative overhead. And it's the only way that you can ethically practice medicine. It's the only way that you can practice medicine at all, as opposed to just being a robot.
I couldn't have said it better myself. That's what we need to do. And, you know, for doctors who are listening to the show who don't know how to go about doing that, how can they reach out to you or AAPS? Because I know direct pay practices is something that AAPS really champions. I mean, I've spoken with a lot of doctors who are doing it and are happy that they're working smarter, not harder. How can we reach out to you?
Well, you can come to our website, aapsonline.org. You can sign up for our free email alerts. Our next Thrive, Not Just Survive workshop will be in Raleigh, North Carolina, June 5th. And you can see on our website, aapsonline.org/freedom, the videotape presentations of many physicians who have escaped being on the third-party treadmill and who are joyfully taking care of their patients at a very reasonable cost in a very ethical way, and they are enjoy going to work every day.
And that's exactly who I want to take care of me, someone who loves what they do and are not muzzled and are able to do what they've been put on this earth to do. Like, I know you got up at the crack of dawn to be with us today, and I want to really thank you. It's a blessing to have you on, and I really appreciate your time, always.
Thank you so much, Dr. George.
All right, get some rest.
I shall do that.
Thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.
This is America's Web Radio.com.